This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. The Baltimore-based group Force is known for pranks where they've created fake websites pretending to be the brands Victoria's Secret and Playboy. The idea is to change how we talk about sexual assault and consent. Now the group is working on a different project to honor survivors of rape and abuse. They envision a giant quilt in the style of the AIDS quilt that would blanket the National Mall in 2016. It will comprise thousands of squares, each made by a survivor or on behalf of a survivor. The idea is to give public space to survivors to share their stories. In preparation for that, the group is holding workshops where people can come together to sew and share their stories. Here's Hannah Brancato, one of the artists behind Force.
There's all these levels of public healing space that we're creating, and the workshops are kind of one of them, where communities should be supportive of each other, shouldn't be afraid to tell their stories, shouldn't be afraid of hearing each other's stories.
Force has been holding workshops all this month, and there's one planned for tomorrow afternoon on Greenmount Avenue in Baltimore. Our producer, Stephanie Hughes, went to a workshop a few months back where she talked with survivors about their stories. This morning, we share stories from three of those survivors. Some felt strongly that we should use their names. One preferred to remain anonymous. A warning, their narratives use explicit language and may be hard to listen to. The banjo and sewing machine you'll hear in the background were part of the survivors' workshop.
My name is Maggie, and I'm working with Force as a workshop coordinator. We've come into the space intentionally. You know, there's an intent of supporting one another and making sure that everyone is heard, while also providing, you know, sort of a creative outlet, which has also been, it's just helpful to sort of be able to let a different part of your mind or body process what happened.
Are you a survivor yourself, or do you have friends who've been through this kind of trauma?
I am a survivor. It's funny because I very rarely think of myself as a survivor, which is probably my own, you know, stuff to work out. But I definitely also have many close friends who are survivors, and it just seems like this issue, whether you consider yourself a survivor or not, has impacted, at least for me, my life in so many different ways and sort of followed me throughout my life, even just like as I was raised as a girl in the world. I think the question of consent was something that was never really addressed and yet loomed. And so in many ways I think of myself as a survivor from that particular like lack of information growing up. Basically I think I never learned how to use my voice or use my like I didn't realize that it was okay to say no in sexual situations. And so that led to a couple of instances that were completely, you know, in the moment, I don't think I realized that I wasn't actually agreeing to what was happening and that I was uncomfortable. Or I knew I was uncomfortable, but I assumed it was my fault and not a big deal because I didn't have the understanding or the language to, like, figure out for myself what was going on or why. You know, that it was actually okay, that I maybe had changed my mind partway through some sort of interaction. I'm going to stop talking about that for a second, if that's okay. Yeah, I'm going to stop.
When you're hearing other people talk about their own stories, and their, you know, does that... Tell me about that experience and how that impacts you. Yeah, and how it makes you think.
In some ways, I think I definitely am like emotionally affected by you know people's stories, and part of it is also you know what we're all humans. We're all like we're in this space in particular to feel whatever comes up and to have emotions, and so it's okay if what someone else is telling me you know visibly affects me. Or I mean I think so, and that's just something that we'll then talk about at that time. You know as long as I'm honest with how I'm doing with the person that I'm talking with, then. It's going to be okay because we're both taking care of each other, and it's like whether or not either of us is conscious of it, I think being in this kind of space sort of creates that kind of bond and that support system type situation.
Tell me what you think about quilting in general, like and the, this, yeah, using quilts mm-hmm. as sort of as a tool to express.
You know, we are, our Force has taken this idea from the AIDS quilt. And in that way, I think it has a beautiful legacy. And I think
taking something that is, that, you know, is handmade, is homemade, and making it your own, and being able to, because of the patchwork idea, you know, there's a lot of metaphor with quilts, which is really cool. You know, being able to have a small piece that then becomes a huge part of this. It's not even really a puzzle, but it kind of is a really beautiful way of connecting everyone across the country and connecting different voices to create an even larger statement. But I think there is a certain level of intimacy that a quilt, that making a quilt requires, that is very connected to sexual assault and abuse and abuse and rape, because that is an incredibly intimate atrocity, intimate act and violent act. But I think in order to produce something that is also equally intimate is a really beautiful way of promoting healing.
My name is Chris Owen. My role here today is one of the workshop coordinators.
And what made you decide to that this is a group you were interested in?
I had some support from my partner, Anna, and she basically had turned me on to the group, and then I expressed, you know, being really curious about working on these kind of projects because I had never done that. In 2008, I was out with some friends at some local bars, and the bar was down the street from my house, so I felt pretty comfortable with being there, and I knew a lot of folks there. And after my friends had left, it was pretty early. It was like nine or so at night, and I was thinking about heading home too, and then realized, you know, I'm home, like, basically, like, let's just meet some people. And so I met some random folks, and we all decided to go downtown. And then when we got downtown, all the people split up except for me and another guy, and I was just, he seemed pretty comfortable, he seemed like a nice guy, but we went down to a bar, and I remember he bought me a drink, and I was like, oh, this is, you know, sad. I've got a, you know, I'm a straight man, and this gay man is now hitting on me, and he's trying to, you know, be more than friends. It's like, I get to have this awkward conversation when I get out of the bathroom. And so I went to the bathroom, and when I came back, I was kind of talking to him, and he was flirting, and I was like, you know, that's nice and all, but I just kind of want to hang out with, you know, friends. But then I started to go unconscious. The last thing I remember is yelling at the bartender, and then I was being dragged down the street and dragged on top of a roof in Mount Vernon and was raped. And somehow I started to become conscious again and fought away and then ran down a fire escape and ran all the way back to Hamden and got home. And since then I've, you know, been going to a little bit of counseling, talking with my friends and doing, you know, doing what I can to understand what the situation is, you know, for me personally and what it is in a larger scale and how it relates to my life.
What is it about sharing in a public space that is hard, but it may be also valuable?
I guess the hard part is that just like any sort of event of sexual abuse, it happens to you alone, and it reoccurs to you alone. And then sharing that and getting that out of yourself and putting it in a space with, you know, whether it's other people, with friends or strangers, it helps you rationalize it. It helps you understand it. It helps you kind of separate it from yourself, I guess, because you keep it locked inside for so long, but once you put it out into the world, you finally realize that it's something separate from you and it's not you, and that you have the power over this memory, over this feeling, over this experience to use it for your own good instead of being controlled by it. And also just the feeling of being known, having you and your story and your personal life out in the world with other people lets you know that someone out there at the very least hears you, at the very most understands you and accepts you.
Can you talk a little bit about being a man and being involved in, you know, in sharing stories of survivors and being a survivor, and how you talk about that, you know. Or
when I talk about that, I talk about that with a lot of questions, I guess, because there's, when you start realizing that, you know, I am the only male here, it's really easy to get into a place where, like, you know, oh, I'm not being offered the services I need. I'm a minority in this situation. But that seems to be the case with everything, like with where I live. Most definitely a minority in that neighborhood. And in most counseling situations and group therapy and other things involved in this world, also am I the minority. But the kinds of abuse and the different kinds of survivors are many and broad, and the story is so multifaceted. And I think it's really important to, at the beginning, when you're trying to understand something that's really complex and really insane and, you know, really hard, is to try to figure out, you know, all of those different perspectives, those different stories, and then, you know, the how they relate opens up, and how, you know, what people need opens up, and the kind of services that these people need can open up. So it's been a pretty long journey for me from that moment to here. Coming here is a really good space for stability, and a good space to work out these issues personally for me, for other people, and being able to provide that kind of space with someone else is just it's amazing.
It's probably going to be a process for me to not only get the story out, but then figure out how I want to portray it on a quilt. So I figure, why not start sooner than later? This year I've finally made a lot of progress in my recovery and in my own growth. And this is one of the first years that, like, I feel enough, I can start letting it in again. I was hanging out with a few friends in college. We went to a happy hour. We decided we want to hang out more. So we went back to my friend Kelly's house and eventually realized her ex-boyfriend, who we were all still friends with, Dave, was really drunk. And I knew that Kelly wanted to have some alone time with our other friend Wesley. So I was like, hey, Dave can come sleep on my futon. I live next door. That'll be great. Dave had apparently other plans. So I support him and we walked back to my place, and then he basically just pushed me through my door and started just being really rough and kissing me, and I tried to push him back, and he just pushed harder and pinned me down to my bed and I guess fingered me really roughly. When he finally let me up, he wanted me to give him head, and I told him no. And then he asked again, and I said, fine, but let me go to the bathroom first. So I grabbed my phone, and I ran to my bathroom, and I realized my underwear was soaked with blood. And then I just started calling everybody I knew to come get me out, to help me out, to save me. And eventually, Kelly and Wesley came over, and, you know, it's funny. I tell people all the time now, I could have dealt with the assault. I could have dealt with that just fine. It was more the complete abandonment that I faced afterwards. Kelly and Wesley didn't want me to go to the police. So when I eventually did, it permanently changed our friendship. And, like, first off, I was already drifting away from them because I couldn't stand being friends with people who were still supporting my rapist. Kelly just kept trying to be like, he's dealing with his own issues. Like, no, I'm sorry. When you're dealing with your own issues, that doesn't entitle you to violate someone's body. Like, no. So yeah, I lost my best friends in the area over it. My parents were really shitty about it at first. I honestly just didn't want to live afterwards. Because when you just don't have a support system there, I mean, I wasn't strong enough to deal with that. I thought, if I can't have my mom, I don't want to do this. it's taken me a long time to get to a place where I still, where I now feel safe, where I now can be upfront with my mother. Like this year, I was having a really rough time before my anniversary. And it's funny that my mom was someone who pretty much yelled at me in the courthouse when we found out the case wasn't going forward. She yelled at me for wasting her time. And that was her then. And this year, she, when I told her I was having a really rough time, she immediately just dropped everything and came out to have dinner with me and just sit with me and let me cry on her. So, I mean, it's been amazing to even see my parents' journey, but like, man, it's hard to remember what it was like.
And I know that's one of the main goals of this cult is to allow a space that's, you know, a public space for survivors to come together and share in whatever way they want, both today and then also
on the mall.
What do you have thoughts about that?
It's just really really exciting to think that people can come out of the woodwork and show their support for this issue that right now we like to blame victims, right now we like to slut shame, right now we like to place all the responsibility for an assault on the victim, and it shouldn't be happening. And I think this is a way for really the general public to understand how much this is happening, how often this is happening. And chances are it's happened to multiple people in their lives, and it's a way to take away that stigma and just show how many people are affected. And I'm really, really excited to have to just make a space for that. So far, we haven't really had one, and that's why it is so scary to come forward and to reveal yourself on Facebook as a survivor. Like it just doesn't exist, and you don't know what kind of response you're going to get. But I think by doing this quilt, we can just announce to the world that we're not going to deal with their shit anymore. I'm really excited to just make people aware.
The voices of three survivors of rape and sexual assault sharing their stories at a Force quilting workshop in Baltimore. Their squares are planned to be part of an installation of the Monument Quilt on the National Mall in 2016. Another workshop is taking place tomorrow in Baltimore on Greenmount Avenue. It's open to the public. We have information about it at our website. You're also welcome to contact us with your thoughts or questions. Call us at 410-881-3162. Again, 410-881-3162. Force is making a 10-city tour with the quilt this summer and holding a Kickstarter to raise funds for the project. If you're interested in learning more about that or holding a workshop of your own, we have links to more information on our website, wypr.org/Marilyn Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. More ahead. Stay with us on 88.1.